Good evening, everyone. If you'd like to take your seats, we'll make a start. So, welcome to the Policy and Resources Committee today on the 7th of February. Like I said, we're now going to make a start. The first item on the agenda is the emergency evacuation procedure. I can confirm that there are no fire alarms scheduled this evening, so if it does go, it is for real. Members will be aware that our nearest exit around the tables is to the rear, and members of the public and members in the gallery, your nearest exit is to your left through the fire doors and the same place where you entered the building. Agenda item 2 is apologies for absence.
Chairman, we have apologies from Councillor Gardner, Councillor Goodrick is substituting, and Councillor Wainwright, Councillor Maud is substituting.
Thank you, and also welcome Councillor Cowling back to the Policy and Resources Committee.
Thank you, I've missed you all.
So agenda item 3 is the minutes of the meeting held on the 29th of November 2018. As Chairman of the Committee, I move the minutes as a correct record, which is seconded by the Vice Chairman. Councillor Cowling.
Sorry, could we just briefly look at minute 66, please? The one public estate programme. As I understand it, that was the minute, the recommendation that went to full council, and that was amended slightly by the addition of a preference for staying on this site by Councillor Oxley. It's just the accuracy of that minute, really, because I was rather perturbed to read in the paper that you'd actually scrapped the plans to move out of Rydale House.
Okay, so the decision of full council following the minute of Councillor Oxley was that we would not be moving away from the Rydale House site. Clearly, further work is undergoing to look at the options for this site itself, including refurbishment, which a strong preference was made at that council meeting.
Sorry, I didn't understand that decision to mean that we were not moving from the Rydale House site. I understood it to mean that we were doing a full financial assessment for the development of a public sector hub for Rydale, which is what the minute says.
Yes, and then following the passage of the amendment by Councillor Oxley, clear preference was expressed for the Rydale House site.
Yeah, but we have to wait and see what the financials come out like on that. That was not, in my opinion, a clear decision to stay here. It was a stated preference. And I think that needs clarifying.
Okay, I'll be happy to clarify that after the meeting in writing, but I'd also urge you to refer back to that debate, because I know as part of the debate that we had at full council, there was an extensive discussion as whether we should be looking to remain on this site or alternatively look elsewhere, and the very strong view expressed of members on a cross-party basis is that we should be remaining at the Rydale District Council, Rydale House site. The question is, how do we do that? And that will be subject to a further options appraisal that's coming to members with the costings.
Yeah, and the members haven't had those options appraisals yet. So
but the issue of whether we'll be staying on the Rydale House site and not moving elsewhere was decided at council. What's more is that further work to progress the moving away from the Rydale House site and work on Wentworth Street car park was halted by that decision of council at that meeting.
Interject at this particular point, that's not my reading of the circumstances of that meeting. If it's other members' reading of that meeting, it was the opinions expressed at that meeting, but I don't think it came to a full resolution with a vote, and as such I don't think it can stand, that opinion at the present time. It has to come back.
Just bear with me one moment, please. Okay, so as part of the decision of full council, we agreed that no further progress be made on the development of the public sector estate outside. Yes, so that's the development in terms of housing. And what's more, there was a preference to continue remaining on Rydell House. And also, if you go back to the debate, there was extensive discussions about that.
It was merely a preference that was stated. It was not a decision. And that preference is subject to further information, which is asked for in that recommendation.
Okay. The matter that we are debating is the minutes of the meeting held at the last policy and resources. So the minutes have been moved and seconded. Unless there is any other discussion relating to the accuracy of the minutes, we're now going to proceed to the vote.
Chairman, that's 4 votes for and 4 abstentions.
Thank you. So we'll now move on to urgent business. I can confirm that there is one item of urgent business to deal with this evening, and the agenda papers for this urgent item have been distributed prior to the meeting. Just bear with me while I swap my papers. So if members refer to the email that was sent yesterday at 15:18, there is an urgent item relating to the preparations for Brexit. The person who will present this report is Tony Galloway, who is the recently appointed interim chief executive. So I'd like to introduce Tony on my far right and give him a very warm welcome to this committee meeting. Tony, would you just like to introduce yourself, please, to members and also present this report?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, as the chairman has said, my name is Tony Galloway, and I'm the newly appointed interim deputy chief executive, and I will present the report on Brexit, preparations for Brexit. First of all, I apologise to members that it was at such short notice, but we only received the actual correspondence several days before that, so hence the short notice. The report itself is a short report which introduces and explains two pieces of correspondence from the Minister for Housing, Communities and Local Government. One is a letter, and the letter is the first item in looking at preparations for Brexit. It outlines the government's approach to the preparations for Brexit, but also makes it quite clear in the letter that the local authorities have a key role to play in the preparation process and to ensure a smooth transition when Brexit actually takes place. The letter identifies the support from central government in terms of the EU Exit Delivery Board. It then goes on to talk at some length of the support from local government to local authorities in terms of technical advice. And thirdly, it talks about the support from local government from central government to local government in terms of providing funding to support the process. The second piece of information provided, which is annexed, is a local authority preparedness checklist, which has been, again, prepared by local government. This identifies a number of key areas within local authority service delivery and business delivery that central government is asking local government to carry out impact assessments. And those impact assessments will identify what impact or potential impact Brexit may have, what mitigations the council will be putting in place, and the potential consequences, looking at the various options in terms of Brexit itself. There are three recommendations that is put to members. The first is that members note the content of the preparedness for Brexit letter. The second is to note the contents of the attached annex, which looks at local authority preparedness checklist. And the third is for officers to undertake relevant impact assessments in line with the authority checklist and prepare a report back on progress to the future committee at its meeting on the 14th of March. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Do members have any questions? No, in which case, as Chair, I'll move the officer recommendation. Is that seconded? So it's seconded by the Vice Chairman. Do members wish to speak on this item? Councillor Raper.
Very quickly, Chairman. The vote was taken in 2016 to exit the European Union, and we're 50 days away from that particular date of exit. It's a little bit late for the government to be coming now. So it's a criticism of government ministers, not necessarily government itself, but the civil service that support them in coming at this late stage with a huge amount of work for our officers now to do. And I think it's regrettable. That's as polite as I can get to it, Chairman, without being rude.
Thank you. Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, exactly the same. I'm just absolutely stunned, probably is the word, or not surprised that we've been asked to do this at such a late stage. How can we prepare for something that is actually going to happen so quickly? And I just feel sorry for all the work that's got to be done so quickly to try and get this back to government. I think it's putting an enormous amount of pressure on us, pressure that we needn't to have had, and something that could have been done as soon as the referendum was taken. So thank you very much for your report, and sorry that we're just stunned with it.
Councillor Thornton.
Thank you very much for the report, and welcome to the council. I'm disappointed enormously because I didn't have any papers to prepare myself for this evening, but I don't think it would really open my eyes in any way or enable me any better to debate the point. But it's too little, too late, and it's just part of the chaos. Thank you.
Any further comments to make? No, in which case we'll proceed to the vote.
Chairman, that's, excuse me, nine votes for and one abstention.
Okay, thank you. So that is carried. The next item on the agenda is declarations of interest. Do members have any interest to declare under the Code of Conduct? Councillor Goodwin.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd like to declare I am a North Yorkshire County Councillor. I believe there's an item on the agenda which will come in later on.
Thank you. Councillor Arnold.
Yeah, also I'm a North Yorkshire County Councillor for anything that may come up in future. Thank you.
Okay, I'll also take it noted that Councillor Burr is a county councillor and Councillor Duncan is a county councillor.
Thank you, Chairman. And also, item 12 and item 13, I won't be voting on these two items. I won't be leaving the room, but I won't be voting.
Okay, thanks. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you just got to state the reason why. So have you got a prejudicial, pecuniary interest, for example? Okay. Any further interest to declare? No, in which case we'll now proceed to agenda item 6, delivering the council plan outlined on pages 9 to 22 of your agenda papers. Becky, I believe you're the lead officer for this item. Will you be able to briefly introduce it to members, please?
Yes, thank you, Chair. this report provides details of progress to elected members on delivering the council plan to show the status of the key performance indicators for the period April 18 through to January 19. And Appendix 1 shows all the indicators, and in particular I draw your attention to the five indicators which are showing either a red or amber status. The report does highlight these indicators and gives a narrative to members in terms of the expected performance for the end of the financial year. And just to remind the committee that officers are continuing to work on improving the current performance management reporting, which will include refreshing and updating targets, which will be subject to a further report to this committee. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Councillor Thornton.
Thank you. On page 15, standard searches carried out in 10 working days. The current searches are relatively low due to business loss to personal search companies when we were short-staffed and had a large workload. This caused our turnaround time to drop and the personal search companies jumped in and took the business. It's probably just an example of cutting the staff too close to the bone. Are we going to win that work back? Do we get payment for those searches? What's the implication of what's happened, that this has been privatised or something?
I think if I could ask Gary Housen just to come to the table to answer that question, because it's one of his work areas.
Thank you for that, Becky, and hopefully my answer will give you some interesting information, Councillor Thornton. I think the response times that you have were about a moment in time when there were some vacancies in that team which have now subsequently been filled, so we're actually seeing performance times increase. Obviously search responses and search inquiries are a competitive world. We have personal search companies who provide that services, so local authorities are in competition with other organisations there. Over the years, roughly, we've maintained roughly about an 80% to 20% split of work that we provide as opposed to 20%, say, to the search companies, and that's diminished a bit in the recent past. The manager in that area team is now actively going back out to the solicitors and people who use those, have used that in the past, to regain that business. So that's the business recapturing that we're looking to do.
Okay, any further questions? Okay, in which case, I'll move that we note the report, which is seconded by the Vice Chairman. Do members wish to comment? Councillor Burr.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Becky for the report. However, it's no surprise to anybody that I've been saying probably for a long, long time now, especially in the last 2 years, that we've been understaffed and we haven't had enough people to perform the business. So although some of the reading is quite disappointing and it would have been nicer if we were hitting more of our targets, I think there is a underriding feeling within councillors that we did cut to the bone too much, and it has been recognised. And hopefully, now that we are getting more staff on board, etc., these performance figures will be able to go up. I think that if you read into it, and as Gary has just pointed out, quite a lot of it probably is that the workload couldn't have been coped with, and I think that is what it's saying. And I'm hoping that obviously we're going to hit our targets much better. We know where our weak areas are. We're doing something to improve those now, and hopefully we will be hitting our targets better in the future. So thank you for highlighting that, Becky, and thank you for all the work that you've done regarding the report.
Thank you. Just on the issue of performance, you say that it's disappointing we're not hitting our targets. You will note that the vast majority of targets we are hitting, and also if you look at some of the performance trends, they are very encouraging. For example, if you look at the planning trends outlined on page 19 of your agenda papers, you'll see that we are actually processing 92% of minor applications within 8 weeks and 100% of major applications within 13 weeks, which, if you compare that to previous years, is a huge increase. Moreover, if you look at the number of the council tax support processing speeds and housing benefit charge events, once again the performance is going in the right direction, which shows that despite the smaller workforce, we are working more efficiently and more smarter to deliver these results. So when you actually look at the evidence before us, rather than just hearsay, there are some very positive trends in here which I do believe should be noted, and also we should say thank you to our officers for delivering some of these results. Yes, there's always areas to improve, and the moment you stop improving is the moment you start going backwards, but overall I think there's some very positive messages within here. Councillor Cowling.
Seeing as we're talking about staffing levels, I think it's worth saying that the structure that we agreed and which was implemented within this council, if it was fully staffed, I don't think there would be a problem. What the problem has been is that we've been unable in some areas of our work to employ staff to fill the vacancies that we've had. So, yes, I would agree that we're a very tight ship now, but we need to fill all those positions that have been vacant for some time.
Just on that point, I know that we have filled several vacancies recently within the council, and as Guy Howardson alluded to earlier, some vacancies have been filled within the planning department, and as you'll note from earlier as well, we have also recently filled the post of Deputy Chief Executive. So progress has been made in that respect. Any further questions? Yes, we are in comments, aren't we? So, Councillor Raper.
Thank you, Chairman. Just to keep our eye on the ball, is there any value or should there be any effort into re-looking at our targets as a whole as to whether they're the right target or could be improved or necessary even? Some of our targets just give us information, and some of them show if they come out with any information, usually pounced on by people outside the corporate entity as being somewhat disappointing, when we know that, as you just alluded to, the evidence sometimes doesn't show, or the evidence on the stats show a negative, when in fact there's a good positive underlying and hiding behind that that front evidence. It's what's behind that evidence that we need to look at, I think. Is there any mileage in that?
Just on that point, yes, work is undergoing to look at the performance targets that we have got to make sure that they are robust and fit and proper. What I will say is if you look at the report and compare it to several years ago, it has improved massively. So, for example, the trend graphs are much more visible and easy to understand. It's more meaningful data. But like I said before, there's always room to improve. And I know that it's an area the scrutiny committee has been looking at. It's also been raised in full council, and it's also an area that the chief executive is looking at. But like everything, it's a case of you know, working through the priority list. So yes, take the point on board, Councillor Raper. Okay, Councillor Thornton.
Thank you, Chair. One of our red blobs comes from a combination of items thrown up by the universal credit slowness and implementation. And universal credit seems to throw up all sorts of problems. And I remember that we were a very early adopter of the rollout of universal credit, and we were paid a bit extra to do that. Now, I'm assuming that at some stage there was a report written about some feedback to government or to Department of Work and Pensions, which I've not seen, and I'd be very interested to see that, and a follow-up to see if the problems thrown up in universal credit in that rollout have been resolved. How do they affect the people of Rydale? Because I'm sure everybody on the doors has found evidence of things that haven't gone very well, and difficulties. And I think there was, I asked about losing homes because of the inability to pay rent. And I wasn't altogether satisfied with the response for that. I'm sure that somewhere we'll have reports on how is universal credit rollout been in the early adoption phase in Rydale and how it's progressed from there. Is this something that members can see, or does it go to a scrutiny committee? How can we understand this better?
Through you, Chairman.
Yes, so we are in the debate now, and we did have questions before. It has been moved and seconded. The point we're making with universal credit, I understand, is can be quite political. On the issue of the question that you have asked, I will provide a written response to that after this meeting, simply because we're in the debate. Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. In order to assist, the Citizens Advice Bureau has been heavily involved in universal credit and its rollout in the pilot project that has been undertaken in Rydale. It has been a subject of the policy forum at Citizens Advice, and it has fed back in directly to government and to our MP with those problems, and it's ongoing. Not only that, Citizens Advice has been awarded the contract in the further rollout of universal credit, and it will be done through them. Citizens Advice.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Burr, you indicated before.
Yes, Chairman, I'd just like to come back to the previous point. Yes, we should focus on what we are doing well, but what we must also focus on is how we can improve. And when I've been talking to members of our team, yes, they have sustained their targets, but they have worked many, many extra hours over and above what is required, and they have been stressed. So if you think that that is positive and we have reached those milestones, but it has had an impact on the personal well-being of our staff, then that is your opinion. It's not my opinion. My opinion is that we look at our staffing and we look at where our weaknesses are, and we make sure that we respond to every item in our plan, because at the moment I don't think we've got it right. I think that we are going to review our targets, and I think that that is absolutely necessary, but I think that it is very positive to look at our weak areas and to also recognise that we have hit some targets, but our team has been under an enormous amount of pressure to actually attain those targets.
Thank you. Councillor Thornton.
Thank you, Chair. Something being too political, I've heard this a few times, and it's really, in translation, this is too awkward to respond to. In what way is universal credit any more or less political than income tax or any other issue that anybody's busy with? And I think it's demeaning to the council just to duck under this thing and say, well, we don't care about that, it's too political, and you shouldn't have asked a question. I am uncertain about how members can be informed about universal credit.
Sorry, I'm going to cut
and
you
it
off.
Came out as a question.
I'm going to cut you off there because there was opportunity to ask questions. We then went into the debate. I just think it sets a wrong precedent if we're having questions when officers are also available to answer the technical aspects, and then go into the debate, and then also potentially draw officers into that debate as well when you're in the midst of it. I don't think it's good practice. I said that I will respond to your question following this meeting, but we're not going to deal with it now. We're in the debate. Thank you. Sorry, Councillor Burr. Did you say something?
Chair, if you're still interested to have a conversation about this.
Would you like to make a point in the debate?
I would like to make a point in this debate.
Okay, please continue.
I would think it very important that councillors are heard in this debate, and we have something in front of us which shines out as a red light. And I think this is something that we can speak about. And just because you feel that it's too political and too uncomfortable doesn't mean to say that we can't talk about universal credit, which has tremendous concerns in the country and indeed in the Conservative Party about the rollout of universal credit. Now, it may be awkward, it may be embarrassing, but I don't see that it's too political to discuss.
Please discuss all you like. Now, like I said, in terms of answering the question, it was question times first. Please continue. Make all the points you wish, Councillor Thornton, on universal credit.
Thank you. I feel that universal credit, the early rollout in Rydale, was done at the expense of officer time. Perhaps with a political enthusiasm, which wasn't necessarily... I don't think it was discussed in with members. However, it has been an issue that has been a problem recognised at all levels of government, and here we have yet more issues thrown up by universal credit, yet we don't know how Rydale, as an early adopter, what the experience was. And we don't know if that experience has improved over time. What I know is when I speak to people on the doors that there is considerable suffering as a result of the introduction of universal credit, and people losing jobs, losing their car, losing their income and having to go to the food banks. And none of this has been reported. I think if we are going to, a stated aim of this council is to improve the economy of the region, we should also be looking at those at the bottom end of the economy who are suffering, and suffering badly. And I think we should be furnished with reports to demonstrate whether this has been resolved since I was last speaking to people. Thank you.
Okay. No members wish to speak on this item. We'll now proceed to the vote.
Excuse me, Chair. You said no members straight off before you asked if there was anybody interested to speak.
Councillor Thornton, I looked round the table. If members wish to speak, they do. But I'm chairing this meeting, okay? Unless other members wish to speak, which was my phrase, we will proceed to the vote.
Chairman, that's 9 votes for and 1 abstention.
Okay, so we'll now proceed to the next agenda item, which is the update on increasing recycling, outlined on page 23 of your agenda papers. Once again, Becky Bennett is the lead officer for this item, so I will ask her to briefly introduce this report.
Thank you, Chair. So following the motion last year from Council on increasing recycling in Rydale, I've reported to this committee a couple of updates previously, and we were waiting for the DEFRA new waste and resources strategy, which came out just before Christmas. So this report is highlighting to members the key points that have come out in this new document. There's a lot to go out. I have attached as an annex what I think is a very straightforward policy briefing, which was prepared by the Local Authority Recycling Advisory Committee for members. There are lots of things going on in North Yorkshire, and as I'm sure are in other parts of the country. There are significant changes in the National Waste Policy that will have some fundamental impacts on local authority collection and disposal operations, and there are a number of consultations planned which will take place this year, and the timescale for most implementations is by 2023 to 2025. Three main areas just to pick out are the extended producer responsibility, which could see a shift in how local authority collection services are funded. Secondly, the deposit return scheme, where the detail is not clear at this stage. However, it is likely that this will cover single-use drinks containers. And finally, collection systems. There is an ambition to have consistent collection systems across all council areas and to preserve high-quality materials. As you know, we're a member of the York and North Yorkshire Waste Management Partnership, and at a recent meeting since the strategy was released, the County Council are also looking at the impacts for the Allerton Waste Recovery Park, and the purpose of this exercise is to understand whether a consistent collection system across North Yorkshire might provide benefits and what the system could look like, the implications of food waste collection, and whether the inclusion of food waste would change the outcome of the best way to collect recyclables, and finally the potential impacts and risks associated with the onward sale of recyclates. So as I said at the beginning, there's a lot in there. The financial impact of the potential changes to waste collections is currently unknown, but expected to be significant. And as outlining next steps, there's a lot of work to do now in terms of looking at the key action points to enable me to come back to this committee with a short and longer term strategy in terms of how Rydale can then look at increasing recycling in Rydale. So that's a summary of what the report is setting out, and as I say, I will come back with regular updates when we get through the work. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Do members have any questions on this item? Councillor Burr.
I'd like to say quite a lot about this, but I'll leave it to the debate. Becky, thank you very much for bringing it to us. You're only bringing to us what you get sent, and you can do no more than that, but just give us what is sent to you. When do you think that you're next going to bring something to us? When might that be, and in what sort of format might that be? Bearing in mind you've got this document in front of you that really is a lot of words but probably not a lot of meaning.
To you, Chair. I do expect to be able to actually bring a report back in March, because I do believe there are some short-term options for this council to consider which we could action quickly. whilst the other work is going on. So that's my intention. The previous report that I did bring set out a list of actions. So I think there are things we could do to our current recycling service and raise awareness with our communities what we currently recycle now, but the considerations around that. So I do plan to come back with some shorter term options as well as some longer term, which will be influenced by the consultation.
Thank you. Councillor Raper.
Yes, I've been reading through these documents for a couple of days, and part of this is that the government are interested in the two-tier authorities and the efficiency of two-tier authorities, which we are part of. But we have a partnership agreement and a working partnership with not just the two-tier authority, but adjacent authorities as well, as I understand it. Is that likely to be under threat? Can we have a robust defence of that should the government decide it wants to go do something slightly different? In your opinion, that is. And I might appreciate I put you on the spot, and if you don't want to answer it, then you can't answer it, don't.
All I would say is that we are part of the York and North Yorkshire Waste Partnership, and we meet regularly on the more meetings table because we are going to approach this very much as a joint on a joint basis.
Going slightly off track on a different aspect of what we've been reading about the implementation of a charge possibly for production of material that doesn't or isn't able to be recycled once it's finished being used by the purpose it was created for. This is music to the ears of a lot of environmentalists, that the polluter pays. And is this something that would be problematic in separating such a material out? Would you have to separate that material out from the normal recycling, and would it be easy to achieve?
Through you, Chair, I think in terms of the costing side, which is probably covered under the area under extended producer responsibility, my understanding is that the costs associated with producing materials that can't be recycled would go back to the producer of those materials. No cost to us. No cost to us, but the detail does need to come out on that.
You're a bit Chairman. Music to my ears.
Councillor Arnold.
Thank you, Chair. Don't you think in the long run it won't be the polluter that pays, it'll be the consumer that pays? Because they'll have to pass their charges on somewhere. So they'll put the pressure.
Yeah, we'll leave that. Yes, we'll leave that question as rhetorical. Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. Just to bring it back to Rydale, we've bought three new vehicles. Are they going to be able to cope with this change in waste strategy, or are we going to have to look to buy a further vehicle to deal with food waste, for example?
The vehicles that we have recently taken onto the recycling fleet are actually fit for purpose. However, they wouldn't be able to cope with food waste. We would need more vehicles.
Any further questions? No, in which case, as Chairman, I will move the officer recommendation, which is seconded by the Vice Chairman. Do members wish to speak on this item? Councillor Raper, I saw you indicate first, then Councillor Cowling.
Thank you, Chairman. Welcome the report. It's very thorough, and there's an awful lot in there that makes interested in reading if you can stick with it. And it took me a couple of days to stick with it, because I did tend to nod off a couple of times. It's repetitive, in a sense, but there's a good news in there. The people who use plastics once and throw it away has to come to a stop. When I was a kid, everything was made with glass, and if you went and bought something, you could take it back and got a return of a few pence at the time, threatens maybe never more than sixpence on a deposit on a big bottle, and I mean a big bottle of lemonade. It was worth a packet of crisps to us kids at the time, I remember. If we harking back to my youth, misspent possibly, but the principle is coming back. It's now becoming nouveau and renewed and regenerated. And so it should. We shouldn't be creating rubbish that we can't get rid of and that takes thousands of years to get rid of and never actually goes away. And the only way that you can finally get rid of it out of a system, really, is to burn it. And then you've got the gases and the pollutants from that get into the atmosphere. So we're still stuck with this material after you've generated and made it in the first instance. And in many respects, I'd like to see us stop generating and making this material in the first instance and look for credible alternatives that actually do biodegrade naturally, as nature would have it degrade naturally in its natural form. There are materials out there that can do this. Straws, plastic straws have been replaced through a plant material now, and after it's got into a recycle bin and compost heap, it actually degenerates and goes away to a mush and finishes up as a liquid. It can be done, and I think we need to push government as much as we possibly can in putting information back and letting the public also join that rank of voicing that anger and concern back to government that this is the way to go. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor Cowling.
Much of what John says is absolutely right, and I think what we as members need to recognise is that we're at the moment, both government and industry recognise that what's happened in the past can't continue to happen. Therefore we are in a stage of great change, both in production of plastics and how they will be disposed of. And I think all we can do is ask for Becky to keep us updated and how we as a council can respond to whatever the government introduces, because I think the next 10 to 15 years we'll see the biggest changes in waste disposal that we've seen perhaps over the last 100 years, and that's got to happen. And I think internationally, nationally and at a very local level like this, it's well recognised.
Thank you. Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. I think government is not quite in tune with the public. And what seems to be happening here is that we've got a resources and waste strategy, and it's got lots of aspirations, and it all says very, very nice things. But it's rather like the Brexit report that you presented us earlier. It's too late. We've known for how long that we were in trouble. We've known that we need to recycle more. We know, and I feel that this has been brought on probably by the media and by public outrage. And I think that as a council, yes, we can look at this and say, oh yeah, you know, in another 10 years we might have implemented some more thing, and Becky is absolutely right about some quick fixes. But I do feel that we really, really should be much more proactive regarding recycling, because when I talk to quite a lot of people, they say that, why is everything taking so long? Why isn't the government saying this is an absolute emergency and it needs to be done much, much quicker? You know, to tell us that, I don't know, 5-10 years might be okay, it isn't good enough. And I think colleagues have said, you know, things need to be done much, much more quickly. And Becky can only bring us this report. Becky is just sharing this report. But surely us as a council need to really think about what we can do and maybe get back to how we were the trailblazers of recycling. We're always hailed as one of the best, and try and get ourselves in that position again, because I think that we've fallen backwards, and I think we now need to note this report and actually be very, very serious about everything and recycling and what we're going to do. And I know that the Chair of Overview and Scrutiny is, you know, is getting serious about this. So I think hopefully that as a council now we can really move forward and do something really positive and much better for the environment, etc.
Councillor Thornton.
Thank you, Chair. It's always good when the bath is overflowing to turn the taps off. And there's going to be a great big tap turned on very soon in Rydell, which is the production of the gas to make the plastic. And it seems odd that here in Rydell we're having a discussion about too much plastic being made when INEOS are poised for their drilling, and INEOS are going to be using the gas that they get from fracking to make plastic. It's not going on the grid. It's not coming into your heating system. It's going to make plastic. So there's somehow we've got to tie those things up, and perhaps we should have a policy in Rydell, as we do for fracking, that for plastics we don't approve of the formation of new plastic production. But I think I'd have to speak to my group leader before I propose that.
Do any of the members wish to speak? No, in which case, just before we go to the vote, I wish to briefly speak on this item myself. I think that plastic waste has massively increased on the agenda over the past few years. Anyone who watched Blue Planet 2 would have been appalled by some of the scenes that they watched, where it's apparent that plastic is having a reach far beyond what we ever could possibly imagine. And I think it's since that programme, in particular myself, you don't realise how much plastic you use on a daily basis that is used only once, maybe twice. And it's only when you actually start to appreciate that and think about it, it's like, blimey, there is an issue here. And that, I think, has been responsible for the public outrage, and rightly so. Whilst, you know, there's a lot we can do at Rydell on a local level, I think we've also got to remember that at a global level, the vast majority of plastic pollution is not caused within the developed world, but within the developing world, and that is where government really should focus some of its efforts in terms of a global solution to a global problem. But going back to Rydell, I think it's clear that the... You know, if we are to increase our recycling waste and if we are to increase more material, that will entail additional costs. And one thing we know is that money is in short supply for local government. One way of potentially doing that is to work more collaboratively with other authorities. So, for example, it's quite nonsensical that Scarborough, for example, or Hambleton and Rydell, you've got seven districts in North Yorkshire, all of whom have their own waste collection practices, all of whom go about collecting their own materials. Some do you know, have one bin for recycled materials, some you know, collect alternatives, and it's not efficient. And you know, once again, if you go in back to the collection rounds, it's really not efficient if you've got a farm on one side of the boundary that's 10 miles you know, outside the way of a collection route, right next to another farm which lies in another council boundary. It's silly that we just can't do it all together, but the different practices make that happen. So I do think when we're looking at increasing our recycling rates and introducing new services, we've also got to look at how we can deliver that more efficiently to ensure that we use every penny that we've got as best as we possibly can. Right, we'll now proceed to the vote, please.
Chairman, that's unanimous.
Okay, thank you. Before we turn to agenda item 8, I would like to revise the order slightly so that we take agenda item 10 now. That's because we've got some external advice on hand if members have technical questions on this item. So I'd rather deal with that this item sooner rather than later. So we're going to turn to agenda item 10. The proposed increase in the number of Moulton Town Councillors outlined on pages 65 to 70 of your agenda papers. If you just bear with us 30 seconds, I will then ask Anthony Winship, our monitoring officer, to briefly introduce his report and answer any technical questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee are advised that the District Council has sought advice from a Mr. James Stevens on my right, who is a consultant with the Association of Electoral Administrators. He's a specialist in community governance reviews. Mr. Chairman, turning to the report on item 10 on tonight's agenda, the subject is a proposed community governance review. And obviously the key question is, what is a community governance review? It's something that, it's a power that Rydal District Council and many other councils have pursuant to Chapter 3 of Part 4 of the Local Government and Public Involvement Health Act 2007. And essentially that act, or that part of the act, devolved the power to take decisions about matters such as the creation of parishes and their electoral arrangements in relation to parish and town councils. They were devolved to the councils, district councils and other councils, from the Secretary of State and the Electoral Commission. And that was undertaken pursuant to that act. So since 13th of February 2008, district councils have had a responsibility for undertaking community governance reviews to look at things like parish boundaries, and also, as in this case, the number of councillors on a parish or town council. And the councils have been able to decide whether or not to give effect to recommendations in those reviews. And in making that decision, Mr. Chairman, the council will need to take account of the views of local people. Now, one of the mechanisms, Mr. Chairman, for triggering a community governance review is a community governance petition. And that is what's happened in this case. And I can well remember, Mr. Chairman, a highly qualified professional councillor in the past queried whether committee and council needed to deal with this kind of thing, because it did seem to be a disproportionate matter to put before a committee and a council. Members are advised that by law, the committee and the council do need to consider this matter. So it's not something that can be just handed to officers to deal outside the member level. It's very much, Parliament has decided that members have control of these issues. So what we've got here, a community governance petition for Moulton Town Council to increase the numbers of town councillors from 10 to 12. And if members so wish, we do actually have some statistics about comparisons with other town councils, particularly Norton and Pickering, about the numbers of electors per town councillor. So if members do want that information, I've got it here. You want me to give it now? This figure is calculated by dividing the number of people on the electoral roll by the number of town councillors. So if we look at Norton, they have 12 town councillors, and there are 6,005 people on the electoral roll, so one town councillor represents 500 people. Pickering, we've got 12 town councillors there, number of local government electors, 5,078. That equates to 489 electors for each town councillor. For Moulton, we have 10 town councillors and 4,348 on the electoral roll, so that equates to 434. Now, interestingly, Mr. Chairman, if the number of town councillors for Malton Town Council was increased to 12, that would mean that there were 362 local government electors for each town councillor. So that would represent a difference to Pickering and Norton. Mr. Chairman, if there are any technical questions, I can field those and Mr. James Stevens can field those.
So just to confirm, Mr. Winship, the representation of Malton per elector, there are already, Malton's already got the greatest representation per councillors?
It's indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chairman, yes, we're saying now actually they have less electors to look after per councillor.
And that's already the case. That's
already
the case. If it's voted to increase, it would become even more of the case.
Disparity, yes.
Yes. Questions? Councillor Burr?
Thank you, and thank you for those statistics. Could you tell me, by law, and we've quoted Pickering, Norton and Malton, by law, do we have to all, that those towns, do they have to have exactly the same numbers? Are you, obviously you've given us the numbers, but my question is, that's all well and good, but is there a law that says everyone must be the same? Because in my world, I've never really known that, one shoe fits all.
You're absolutely correct. There are two different organisations. One is the government department sort of does a sort of rough guide outline of what possibly could be across the country for the number of electors, what a suggested range of the number of councillors. It is quite a wide range. Similarly, not necessarily a comparison, because the real issue is how much a parish, or I call it a parish council, forgive me, but legally it's still a parish council in terms of description. Their range of work they carry out and what they perform. There are a lot of councils that have totally different agendas to what they want to deliver for their, others are quite happy to take a much lower role. The only thing I would say about this, I've had no evidence submitted from the town council as to the fact they can't deliver their own agenda. There's no, the only suggestion and evidence they gave was that there's been some more housing. That's been the only information we've received from them.
Councillor Cowling.
Is it fair to say that there would be no implications, either cost or otherwise, for this council should the number increase to 12?
There would probably be no additional funding. I'm not familiar with how the precept is. There are some parts around the country where the local authority provides a precept, but this should not affect numbers. So the answer is no.
Councillor Arnold.
It says in your report that it is in consultation with residents, yet there's only 5 residents replied to the consultation. Is that a fair representation?
Chairman, I think the report also goes on to say that, yes, there is only 5 people that commented, but I suppose if I was to be at devil's advocate, I'd say there were 436 people from that area that had already given a strong opinion that they are in favour of it. There were no objections opposing it from anybody. But that's the point. There were 436. So you have to weigh out what that really means.
Councillor Vapor.
Thank you, Chairman. Good evening, sir. Thanks for coming and explaining this to us. The government try to have members of parliament's electoral divisions at a sort of a number that's equal to each parliamentary constituency. They would desire to have the same number of electorate in each division of a constituency. So, taking that as a thumb rule, is there a prescribed or advised even number of members of council for a parish per the to equal the population at all?
Councillor Vapor, I think the essence of that question is very similar to the one that Councillor Burr asked, which is that it varies considerably and is also determined by the activities carried out by that council. Is there anything more specifically that you would like to question?
Specifically, is there a rule of thumb from any source whatsoever that recommends a particular number?
As I said, the National Association of Local Councils, which actually represents parish councils nationally, there are ranges, but they're so wide that you could pick a number anywhere between it. And, of course, there's no requirement that one local authority area applies the same banding as the next-door neighbour. So,
Councillor Duncan?
Yeah, just returning back to the consultation responses, obviously there was five people that actually responded. Do we know how many of those were actually Moulton Town Councillors that responded to the consultation?
I do not have the actual responses, but I know that the council officers did receive them. But I just got the statistics provided to me.
We've not got that information available. Councillor Thornton.
Thank you, Chair. If there's no set number, or it's such a wide range that it's effectively no set number, but Moulton want 12 councillors, even though it's a different number to Norton and Pickering, is there any reason that Rydale would say anything other than yes, go ahead and get them if you can get them?
It's a sort of subjective argument, really, if I may say so. I think one of the things the government always hoped for within the community governance review would be that we would get to a point of having elections by contest rather than, unfortunately, the current trend of unelected representatives spending public money and the danger of increasing the number of electors when already there have not been contested elections for the last two elections, four yearly cycle elections at least, probably even more than that. But I think the point is, it's less likely to get contested election, which the government will feel is not necessarily appropriate.
Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm going to look at this purely on the numbers. We've got 6,000 people in Norton, 500 people per councillor. There's 1,657 less people in Moulton. If you look at the numbers, that would equate to 9 councillors, not 10. So frankly, I'm quite happy to leave it at the status quo. I don't see the need to take 10 to 12, particularly when we've got unelected contests. But the question is, why should we change this?
In answer to that question, I'll probably leave that as rhetorical because I think it's something we have got to collectively answer. Councillor Arnold.
Right, thank you, Chairman. Just for clarification, it does say in the papers, I know, but for clarification, the only evidence to increase it from 10 to 12, the only reason by the petitioners is the increase in housing arising from the new housing developments. Is that the only reason given?
That's correct.
Thank you very much.
Councillor Vapor, did you have another question? Any further questions? Okay, in which case we'll go into the debate. As Chairman, I would like to move recommendation 3, that no change be made to the number of councillors for Moulton Town Council. Is that seconded? That's second. The reason why I have moved that recommendation is going back to the issue of democracy, which is of absolute importance. The fact that there have been no elections at the previous two electoral cycles is disappointing. It means the representatives of Moulton are not accountable, and it means they are spending public funds,
making important decisions and representing the community without a democratic mandate. I take democracy with the utmost seriousness, as I'm sure all members do, bearing in mind that our forefathers have died fighting to defend democracy. To have an unelected body making such decisions is contrary to that democratic principle. And the fact that the number, the population of Moulton Town Council has increased, which may in turn increase the likelihood of an election, is to be welcomed. The fact that there has been no election previously probably indicates that number's been too high, and you could use as evidence for that the fact that Moulton have been far more represented than Norton and Pickering. The reason why this decision is coming to our council and not Moulton themselves is an issue that you should not mark your own homework. We are the safeguard. In the same way that it would not be right for us to increase our council members to say to 60, 100, etc., so that we could guarantee we do not face an election, we could guarantee that we do not face accountability or democracy. I'm sure that would be stopped, and rightly so. We are that safeguard, and we've got responsibilities to ensure the democratic voice of the people of Moulton. I've spoken quite strongly because it is such a, like I said, fundamental issue, but that, therefore, you know, without hesitation, I move that the numbers do not be increased, which is also evidenced by the extremely low response rate at 5 people. Councillor Arnold, the seconder. No. Councillor Berto, we'll come to you as ward member.
Well, first of all, I totally disagree with you, and I would like to support and move item one. I don't know if I've got a seconder. And the reason that...
Sorry, you can move an amendment, but I've moved item three, so you can look to amend that, or if my movement fails, then you could look to move that subsequently.
I'll move an amendment, as I say, but I don't know if I've got a seconder. So, the reason that I support the increase of...
Are you moving the amendment now? Are you speaking first? Okay.
Yeah.
What's the amendment, please?
I support the increase of the councillors.
So, we just need that specifically, so that you basically... how are you, what wording are you changing?
I support the increase of councillors, little one.
Okay, so basically, really, you move... deleting three... and inserting the wording of item one.
Well, I'll speak. First of all, I'll speak against your proposal.
Okay.
Okay. That's what I'll do. So, I don't agree with you, and I'll tell you the reasons why. So, first of all, it has been pointed out to us tonight by our solicitor and our guest that many councils differ in many, many ways. And I fundamentally agree in life, in business, in councils, whatever, that one shoe does not fit all. First of all, it is of no cost at all to this council if we increase the number of councillors. Not one of you round this table, I think I'm right in saying, attends Moulton Town Council. And you probably do not know what they do, what their business is, and how they actually manage their business. They are a proactive council, and they want to do lots and lots of different things. To talk about democratic, surely increasing councillors, getting more people involved who want to be involved, is surely commendable. One thing that I would say is disappointing is that we haven't had any elections. However, I'm sure that that is about to change. Just because it hasn't happened, that doesn't mean to say that it will happen. And who are we to say that Moulton Town Council, if they honestly feel that they need 12 councillors, who are we to say and as I've said, who none of you ever go or know their business or know what they do, who are you to say, oh, well, because the numbers don't stack up, I don't think we're going to support it. And it doesn't actually matter about the numbers because it's been pointed out. Many councils and parishes do completely different things and want to do and have aspirations to do different things. And lots of people want to get involved, and that is why it has come to the table. So I'm bitterly disappointed that we are being, once again, quite autocratic and saying that we will decide on what is going to happen to Moulton Town Council, although it's not going to cost us a penny or really have no implications at all for either one of you who sit round this table, because you don't actually attend those meetings. So I absolutely fundamentally disagree with what Councillor Ives has said.
Councillor Cowling.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, I shall be supporting your recommendation, Chairman. I'm appalled that the law is that this has to come to us for a decision. I think that's an awful position to be in to begin with. Not that I'm scared of making decisions on behalf of other people, because I'm not. But I do think that Moulton Town Council have identified that they think that they need 12 councillors, and over 400 people have supported that. I don't attend Moulton Town Council, but there are a number of Moulton Town councillors that I know quite well. Moulton Town Council is a very ambitious council. It does much more than many town councils or parish councils. And I think that if this is what they want, I don't think we have the right to say no to them.
Councillor Vapor.
Thank you, Chairman. Interesting argument coming forward. Parish councils I am familiar with in my own patch have had for the past 15 years a difficulty in attracting people to come and sit in and be spend an evening deliberating over the niceties, the wrongs and the rights of their own local community. I don't suppose it's much different for a town council as it is for some of the villages that I represent, or the larger villages that I represent. They are six members short between two local councils, both missing three members to sit on there. Now, I'm seriously concerned about that, and in a sense, we're not getting the elections. Everybody's getting re-elected unopposed. And as you say, that is not serving democracy. It is not serving the people that they represent and that I also represent. They don't have a choice. They get whoever turns up on the day, or the one that shows the slightest interest, oh, will you come and join us? We've got to sit there, you know, and don't be afraid to speak. And people are afraid to speak, even in their own small communities, because they see arguments potentially developing and bad feeling coming forward and so forth. It's a nettle to grasp, and a lot of people don't want to grasp that nettle. They don't like being stung, or they're potentially in the head. They don't like the idea of a stinging nettle being grasped by the hand. So there is a problem in perceptual terms. We have it slightly harder in this environment, is because it's that much more political at this level and at the county as well. There's more impetus. But there's a financial angle that the parishes don't have as great a financial angle as we have. But they are spending money. They're spending their own ratepayers' money. They can levy their own people for what that levy should be and the rate it should be. And the responsibility needs to be shared. And so I'm loath to support your recommendation, Chairman. I'm also loath to support Councillor Burr in her that she wants to increase. the 10 that they've got seem to be adequate for the time being. And until the people that they represent come forward and say, we haven't got enough. It's the council coming and saying we haven't got enough is one thing. But when the people come forward and say we haven't got the representation we require and desire and demand, then I think we shouldn't be doing a great deal at all. It should be status quo, so far as I'm concerned. Without any amendment, without any recommendation, we just say, sorry, we're not making a decision, you leave it as it is. And then leave it to them to do their own thing. It's a mess that can develop up and get us embroiled in stuff that we shouldn't be embroiled in.
Thank you. Councillor Goodwick.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to come back to the original statement that I made. There's over 1,600 people less in Moulton. On that basis, if you compare it to Norton and Pickering, it should be 9 members. They've got 10 members. I think that's a perfectly good reason to leave it as it is. Until such times as the people of Moulton come forward in their droves and say they want it to change.
Councillor Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few points to pick up on, I think. I know we've heard a lot about the numbers in comparison with other town councils in particular, or the biggest town councils anyway. I'm not too concerned about trying to make sure that those numbers are broadly equal, because we obviously have loads of parish councils across the district, some of which may represent tens of members rather than hundreds. So in that sense, I'm not too concerned about trying to get that equality in that sense. Again, the consultation with 5 people responding, it's disappointing. However, I don't think an issue like this is ever going to set the public on fire, and you're never going to get a massive response. I do, however, think that a large part of this has been driven by the town council itself rather than the general public. The issue of cost has been mentioned, and the particular cost to this council, in the fact that increasing the numbers in and of itself would not cause any increased cost implications. Of course, the biggest cost implication, as far as I can work out, would be if there was to be an election. I think, as far as I'm aware, the cost to this council would be we cover the cost of parish elections if there is to be one. They're likely to coincide with the same day as another set of elections, which I'm sure we're all aware of. But I think, actually, the cost, I would actually like to see some cost implication to Moulton Town Council in the fact that there would be an election and more people would be going forward for consideration than the number of vacancies. And I think it is disappointing that in the past 2 elections there hasn't been more candidates than vacancies. And I think that's something which we should, not be happy with. I think if we were to compare on the same level a town council like Moulton with the Rydale district, if we were to have significantly less candidates coming forward than the 30 in a Rydale district council elections, I think we would be asking ourselves whether the numbers were fit for purpose. So on that basis, trying to consider them equally in that sense, I think that the right thing to do would be to keep the numbers that we've got at present and try to encourage people to actually contest those elections to make sure that the best people are coming forward for those roles. So at the moment, unless things change, I think I would be supportive of the proposal you've put forward.
Thank you, Councillor Duncan. Just to confirm, if a parish election coincides with the district election, the district council picks up the cost. If there is a by-election or the cycle is different to the district council, then the parish council would pick up the cost. So let's, hypothetically, if there's an election this year, the district council would pick up the cost, but clearly the cost of that would be minimal because there would already be a count taking place and there would already be the polling stations open. The cost would be much more significant if there was a by-election, for example. Councillor Maud.
Thank you, Chairman. We have 11 members on Rillington Parish Council. I don't know. I can't tell you. I can't tell you how many electorate we have, but off the top of my head. But for the last 3 elections, for the last 3 times there's been an election, we have had an election, and so I'm. And I'm sure Malton Town Council is much more proactive than what we are at Rillington. And I would like to support Lindsay's amendment and second proposal that it be, there is a change of, okay.
Thank you, Councillor Thornton.
Thank you, Chair. I think Malton Council have done jolly well, even if they've frog-marched people up to sign bits of paper. 436 residents have asked for an increase from 10 to 12. That's 10% of their voter base. And so I think that is not an insignificant number. And if Malton Town Council feel they need or would like 12 councillors, there's no cost to Rydell. I don't see why they shouldn't. I seem to remember Pickering had any number of unelected councillors with no elections, and nobody was saying that this is undemocratic. And I think it's a very interesting sort of suggestion that we shouldn't have unelected councillors.
Okay, I'll take it as correct then that Pickering did not dispute the fact that they didn't want an election. Councillor Arnold.
Thanks, Chairman. Just very briefly, I'll just go back to what my mentioned in my question. That the only reason given for the increase, and no, there was no, the little or no other evidence given, was due to the increase in the housing arising from the new housing developments. So I would be in agreement with your proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. So I believe everyone has spoken on this item. So I'll come back to myself to wrap up as mover. Sorry, Councillor? Okay, if you briefly, yes, we'll briefly allow you.
Caroline, you said that if people come in their droves, then we'd have to think about it. Well, I think people have come in their droves. 10% of the electorate, to me, is droves. Because if you get a 10% vote, you're doing very, very well. That's what they've asked for. You're saying no, simply because you can. I'd be extremely disappointed if this recommendation is successful. I think it sends a really bad message out to Malton Town Council, and I think they will be knocking on our door after tonight if we do this. I'd be appalled if this council says no.
Thank you. So just to wrap up, while 10% of people may have requested this to come forward, there's also 90%, you know, nine times as many who have not requested this to come forward. The reason why you go to a formal consultation is to allow people to be given the information in order to allow them to give an informed response. I wonder if all the people who requested this to come forward were aware that there has been no election at the previous two cycles. It's easy to sign a piece of paper when someone comes knocking at the doorstep or approaches you. When you've got all the information, as we have, then it may be a different story. And like I said, we are the safeguard. We have the responsibility, as laid out in an Act of Parliament. We're that degree of independence, and like I said, democracy is fundamental, and it is wrong that you have unelected people setting a preset, forcibly taxing other people, taking away their income without any democratic mandate, without any accountability for their decision, which has happened on the previous two occasions. And if there is clearly a huge desire among people to come forward, then that would be apparent this year. There is an election shortly. But, you know, clearly it is very healthy for democracy to have that accountability, to have that choice. And at the moment, the people of North Moulton have not had that on the last two occasions. We'll now proceed to the vote.
Chairman, that's 5 votes for, 4 against, and 1 abstention.
Thank you. So that is carried, and that will be the recommendation that goes on to full council. We'll now return to the Part A item, which is remaining on the agenda, item 8. The update on the experimental 7.5 tonne weight restriction at Norton Level Crossing. Gary Housden is the lead officer for this item, so I will ask you to briefly introduce the paper, Gary, and then there will be an opportunity for members to ask questions.
Thank you, Chairman. I will be brief. I'm aware there's a lot on the agenda tonight, and this is just really an information report for members. The experimental 7.5-tonne HGV weight restriction at Norton Crossing in between the two towns is an 18-month experimental process, and the report does detail for members that that commenced at the end of February last year. So we're getting on for nearly 12 months into that process, although it's regrettable that there was some tampering with some of the vehicle counting equipment on the Norton side of the river, as I understand it, at some point, which has had some impact on some of the traffic counting. The gist of the report explains that the temporary period expires at the end of August this year, and clearly there's an amount of monitoring that have been going on of the crossing by NYCC trading standards, which has led to a number of vehicles being investigated, and the report details that prior to Christmas some of those had already appeared in court. I'm aware that others also have now appeared in court, and I'm waiting for further information on that, which we'll report to you at some point in the future. The County Council have confirmed that they are intending to carry out a further consultation with interested parties, including ourselves, prior to the end of the experiment, but with some more analysis of traffic activity, enforcement, and any changes to habits, Chairman. The other thing to note in the report is that we are now currently in the process of assessing last year's air quality management area figures, which are calendar year, so it's January to December, although there's always a time lag. But in terms of raw data, we're already showing much reduced reductions in NO2 levels in the Castlegate area, which are the three monitoring points nearest to the crossing. So all of that work's ongoing. We're anticipating a consultation in the next 2 or 3 months. We're not absolutely sure, because we're in the hands of the County Council as to when that's precisely going to happen, but they will need to do that in advance of the end of the experiment. So if you ask me to guess, Chairman, I guess we'll be looking at a report back to a PNR probably in June, is my best guess at this stage.
Okay, thank you, Gary. Do members have any questions? Councillor Duncan?
It's kind of a question in that, obviously taking on board what you said.
You mean
about
it is a question?
Well,
it is a question. I will go to the. Make the point in the debate.
Well, I mean, basically, this consultation had been open originally and was supposed to last 6 months. And as far as I know, North Yorkshire County Council didn't approach this council to give their comments. Is that correct? That's my question.
I think the issue here is that we were made aware of the progress report at the area committee, but clearly officers here, which were involved not just in this piece of work but the connectivity study work and the traffic modelling work, which is also not quite this piece of work but it's all involved around traffic and congestion and air quality in this part of the town, inquired of officers at county, at the area offices and then at County Hall, whether there would be a further consultation on the results of the experiment. And officers at County Hall have confirmed that that will be the case.
Okay. Any other questions? Councillor Thornton.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I was delighted to see the nitrogen dioxide levels going down in Malton. Has there been any rise in the NO2 in Norton as a result of the congestion down Church Street and St Nicholas Street?
That's a good question, Councillor Thornton, and the answer is I don't know at the moment. I mean, I think the issue here is that the monitoring points that we have, and there are quite a number of them, are all in the designated air quality management area, and that area is very much concentrated on the built-up area of the two towns. So you've got Castlegate, parts of Wheelgate, Old Maltongate, and Yorkersgate, those two roads cross. You've got a large number of vehicles going through in that area, which is where the exceedances have historically been. So beyond those areas, we're not even close to anywhere near the limits that would have warranted the designation of the air quality management area. So Church Street is not in the air quality management area, nor would it likely be.
Yes.
I think when there was an obvious increase in traffic down St Nicholas Street, it was requested, and I'm sure there were air tubes put up there, but because it's not in the air monitoring area, it's not, I can understand, part of that air monitoring scheme. But there was a concern always that they'd be shifting the air quality issues into Norton. And I thought that had been set up around...
I would need to give you an answer to that, having spoken to the senior environment specialist. But I think the essence of this whole approach to traffic in these two towns is essentially around redistribution of traffic in the main. So obviously the critical points are where historically the exceedances have been, and trying to address that. The weight limit is a sort of slightly different thing in the sense that it doesn't just seek to redistribute traffic in the network. It actually tries to take them away from pressure points. So in other words, traffic that would have been heavy traffic going over the crossing historically is now being directed away from that crossing point, because that's where it's going in and out of the air quality management area.
Any further questions? Councillor Vapor?
Just a quick thought that's just literally popped up just as you're speaking, is the effect of the doubling of the rail traffic at that location. Has any thoughts as to that potential impact been incorporated within this report?
The answer to that is the SISTRA report, which was referred to in the County Council's, I nearly called it the Area Committee, but it's the Constituency Committee now, back in November, identified that modelling had already taken place associated with our sites document work, which was suggesting that would not be an issue. Having said that, that's modelling the proof of the puddings in the eating, as it were, although those of you who are familiar with the locality will already know that trains are already being run through the crossing area and closures coming down, modelling for the two stops. In fact, I found myself sat in a barrier downtime only a couple of 3 days ago. So that's already happening. But I think nothing ever stands still. In terms of the downward trend, in terms of the levels that we're reading across all the monitoring points, there haven't been any exceedances for 2 years, and some of that is relating to traffic management, but also the fleet is getting cleaner. You know, at your car, my car, the newer cars are getting cleaner, and that coupled with other matters relating to things like HGV weight limit restrictions are all part of that picture. But certainly the last end of year results that our EHOs had seen were significant reductions in this part of the air quality management area.
Any further questions? No, in which case I'll move the officer recommendation, which is seconded by the Vice Chairman. Councillor Duncan.
I'd like to move an amendment to that recommendation.
Okay, please.
It states, Rydal District Council notes with serious concern North Yorkshire County Council data showing no overall reduction in HG movements through Butcher Corner so far. The major displacement of HGV traffic along Highfield Road in Moulton and through the villages of Harton, Howsham, Langton, Setrington, Scagglethorpe and others. And the Moulton and Norton air quality assessment produced by Sistra in support of the Rydale local plan, which found there will be, quote, no significant benefit of introducing the restriction, and therefore call on North Yorkshire County Council to end its pilot HGV restriction as soon as possible, and in conjunction with Rydale District Council, pursue alternative initiatives to improve air quality at Butcher Corner.
Thank you. I will second that amendment. It may be useful, Councillor Duncan, for those who have iPads in the room, if you could quickly email the amendment out to all councillors. Yeah, I'm seconding. Yeah, all RDC councillors. Thank you. So just to confirm your amendment, Councillor Duncan, Rydal District Council notes with serious concern. Number one, NYCC data shows no overall reduction in HGV movements through Butcher Corner so far. Two, the major displacement of HGV traffic along Highfield Road in Moulton and through the villages of Harton, Langton, Setrington, Scagglethorpe, among others. Three, the Moulton and Norton air quality assessment produced by Sistra in support of the Rydale local plan, which found there would be no significant benefit of introducing the restriction, and therefore call upon North Yorkshire County Council to end its pilot HGV restriction as soon as possible, and in conjunction with Rydale District Council pursue alternative initiatives to improve air quality at Butcher Corner. Councillor Duncan, would you like to speak on the amendment, please?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's worth just going back slightly as to why this was introduced in the first place. It's been a saga that's been going on for a fair few years now, and it was obviously included as part of a list of measures following the Bramboin Fields roundabout, and the purpose was to improve air quality in the air quality management area at Butcher Corner. The evidence that North Yorkshire County Council has collated so far during the length of its experimental ban does show quite detailed information on the various directions from which traffic has either increased, decreased or stayed the same. And overall, while there has been some increases in traffic in certain directions and decreases in others at Butcher Corner, overall it appears there has been no reduction on HGV movements at Butcher Corner, and therefore any improvement in air quality can't be because the numbers of HGVs have been removed from that area, because that is not the case so far. The impact in the town, I think, has been very significant. Highfield Road in particular, past the two primary schools there and the narrow kind of raised bridge area and the difficult corner at onto Old Moulton Road. I think there's very serious concerns from the residents who live along that road and also from parents of pupils at the school. Church Street as well, there's been a significant increase in traffic through Norton. But I would stress that the impact has not just been in the wards of Moulton, Norton East and Norton West. It has also been in a number of neighbouring wards stretching several miles from the town centre. The Motherby Ward, the Derwent Ward, Rydale South West, and even further afield from that. I know a number of the parish councils have already written into North Yorkshire County Council's consultation to make clear their serious concerns about the ban. I think that's just important to reference that it is not just the impact inside the town, but also on villages elsewhere as well. So really, the evidence that has been collated by North Yorkshire County Council over several months now shows that the ban has not been successful. It has been a failure, really, in terms of its main purpose of improving air quality. And not only has it been a failure in achieving the purpose it was intended to do, it's also had these catastrophic knock-on effects on the town and also on villages surrounding the town as well. I'm seriously concerned about those effects, and I hope that other members can share that concern with me and support this amendment, which will give North Yorkshire County Council, I think, a very clear steer from ourselves at this particular moment. The reason why I asked the question of Gary originally is that the initial period was 6 months for consultation, and this council, I don't think, was asked, and neither did it give a response to that consultation. That consultation came to an end, and it was only when I spoke to the directors at the county council stating that we hadn't given a response and that people would like to, that was reopened. And I hope that the same doesn't happen this time, in that Rydale is too late to give its response.
Thank you, Councillor Duncan. Do other members wish to speak on this item? Councillor Burr?
Thank you very much. There's quite a lot going on here, especially with the HGV movements, and especially we've talked about the problems in Norton. So I think what I'd like to do is I'd like to split it into two, because first of all, the catastrophic problems that are happening in Norton at the moment cannot be blamed on the HGV ban. That is absolutely 100% right, because the HGV ban, and I should know, and it was long before Councillor Duncan was on this council, when I was championing the new roadworks, the Brambling Fields, and it was £500,000 of complementary measures. £500,000 that the North York County Council kept from doing that. They had that money and they didn't bother to even do it. So all this time has gone by, which they could have done something, they could have implemented something much, much better, and they could have helped with the air traffic control, with the air pollution control, and they didn't. So North York County Council have really, really dragged their feet on this. But we are getting wrapped up in something that actually, there's two things going on here at the moment. It's the HGV ban, and it's the catastrophe that is actually happening in Norton, and the two don't go together. But I think, Councillor Duncan, you are trying to put those two together. Did you want to just make sure that that was stopped there, because obviously I was interrupted? Thank you very much. Did you want to interrupt any more? Thank you. Okay, so first of all, the air quality control. You are the vice chairman of that committee. we have got the chairman sat there, and Councillor Arnold and myself are on that committee. It's dragged its heels for months and months and months, and nothing has been done about it. Now, whether we like it or not, there has been some displacement, okay, but there are lots of other issues that need to be looked at. And at the last meeting, you'll remember that I actually did suggest that we need that data and we need to find out what is actually happening. And I think you were supportive of that. And I think that what you're trying to do with this is actually say, let's end the pilot of the HGV because we've got loads and loads of problems. Well, I think there's two separate issues, and I think you are preempting it. The HGV ban was there because of the air quality, not because of the catastrophe. And you must have read that there is an awful lot of problems with respiratory problems in not only England, but especially in Moulton and Norton. So you can't have it always. And also, Councillor Duncan, you must remember that those HGV bans, that HGV ban was actually vital for the safety of pedestrians on Butcher Corner. Have you ever tried to take someone in a wheelchair or take a child in a buggy over Butcher Corner when a HGV is going round? So there are a lot more things to consider than by this. I have sympathy with some of the things that you're actually saying, but in totality, I don't think I can support what you're trying to do. I think that I'll just have a little bit longer. What you need to do, your vice chairman, and you've got your chairman sat there, you need to get that sorted out.
Yeah, I've had 4 minutes. I'm going to have to
draw a
line. I've been extremely generous. Do other members wish to speak? Councillor Thornton.
Thank you. I think we have to look at the evidence, but be sure that we're looking at evidence that's been sorted and sifted to try to tease out what has and hasn't happened in the survey. That's really important. And I'm glad that they've been counting vehicle movements, as I think we requested at the start of the game, in areas where, like Hovingham and so on, and in your list of villages, where there may be an increase in heavy goods vehicles trying to find a way around. But in your amendment, you talked about other measures to improve air quality. I would be very interested to hear what those other measures are that you would like and if they are achievable. And if anybody can explain to me how on earth we can get around the moving the traffic through Moulton, around Moulton, avoiding Moulton without considerable expenditure, I'd be delighted to hear. But the original Brambling Fields came with the complementary measures. And they were supposed to resolve a number of these issues. So I think it deserves a wider sort of discussion because have we got the evidence that it's the HGV movements, that it's the ban on the HGV that's had all the effects, or is it just being sold as something that would be easier to live with if we put the HGVs back over the bridge?
Thank you. Councillor Arnold.
Thank you, Chair. I actually think that I don't travel to Moulton an awful lot, so I only know about the congestion is what I read about it mainly. I do travel irregularly. From what I can gather, I feel this is an 18-month consultation, and I don't believe it should be cut short. We should get to the end of it because there could be more information coming out. So I think it should be let to run its course.
Councillor Goodwick.
Thank you, Chairman. We've sat on this constituency committee, area committee, for a long time and been desperate for this 7.5-ton ban. And we got it. Now, I don't say it hasn't come without its problems, but it has. But the air quality indicators are that it's effective, because we're not exceeding those limits. And I expect those limits actually to go down even further. I think it'll get tighter because of the information that we've got in London where a child has been affected by air quality with asthma. I think it's only going to get worse if those limits are reduced down for us to make that reduction and to be there. So we had a consultation, we had a period of time where we looked at what the evidence was, but those were damaged, which is why it had to be extended, because people went and ripped them up. Now, we need the evidence, so let's let the evidence speak for itself and continue with gathering the data and looking at what we get, because it isn't just about 7.5-ton weight limits over County Bridge. It's about a lot of other things, and actually, some of the haulage companies need to look very carefully about how they behave, because they're trying to take rat runs to save fuel and to save time and get more and more out of the vehicles. And that's why we're seeing an increase on the back roads, because they don't want to go on the main roads because they're so crowded. So I think all of this needs looking at really carefully with data and a holistic view of the whole lot. And if it means introducing one-way systems around Moulton and Norton to make the traffic move, let's do that. Let's be brave. But let's have the evidence first.
Councillor Vapor.
Thank you, Chairman. I couldn't agree more with Councillor Goodrick. I think this particular committee isn't suited to make a decision of this magnitude on this particular topic. This is something for a full council, not for a committee of council. So I will not be supporting the proposal or as it's put at the present time. Traffic is traffic, and it's poisonous to a lot of people for various reasons. And it's dangerous to people for a lot of known reasons. But we have a study in place that hasn't concluded, and if we don't conclude that study, we'll be castigated forever and a day for not doing so. Rightly so, and I'll be one of them doing the casting. We need the evidence, we need the information, we need full information before we make... We've said it before on numerous occasions on different topics. You can't make a credible and reliable decision on partial information or going off half-cocked or without full thought and consideration of fact. And at the present time, I don't think we've got that. It sounds okay. Does sound okay. Well, the levels have dropped. Let's drop the ban. Okay, everybody will go and vote for that, won't they? Yes, they will. It's a no-brainer on that front. But it hasn't taken into account why this course of action was taken in the first instance. And agreed, the people who run the larger vehicles are the ones who will be the only beneficiary from such an action, and it might save them a few coppers here and there per mile. Okay, I understand that running large vehicles is expensive, but that comes with the territory that they're in, and if they can't cope with that, then I think they really need to sort out themselves and go do something different. So I will be voting against this particular motion, Chairman.
Thank you. Do other members wish to speak? No, in which case, as mover of the amendment, I'll come back to yourself, Councillor Duncan.
Yeah, I just want to address a few points that have been raised in the debate, and I think it's good to have this debate. Councillor Bell was talking about another issue. There is no other issue I was mentioning in my comments. I know there are issues at the level crossing. As far as I'm concerned, that has no influence on the effectiveness of the HGV ban as it currently stands or might stand in the future. There is a big issue there, but I'm not been talking about that tonight and do not want to delve into that. We've heard about the HGV ban being successful in improving air quality. Now, the only way that the HGV ban could be successful in improving air quality is if the number of HGVs moving between the various arms of Butcher Corner had reduced, the number of vehicles in that area gone down, and the amount of pollution they're putting out in that area reduced also. The number of HGVs, as the data collected by North Yorkshire County Council in its very detailed report to the Area Committee, shows the number in some areas, in some arms of Butcher Corner, has increased. Not decreased or stayed the same, increased since the HGV ban was introduced. In some areas, there have been reductions, but in others, overall, in the Butcher Corner area as a whole, the number of HGVs has, there's no indication that it has reduced whatsoever. So when Councillor Burr is talking about the safety of pedestrians and crossing that very difficult area, 100% completely agree, it's very difficult. But it's just as difficult now as it was before, because the number of HGVs in that area has stayed overall the same. We cannot attribute any success to the air quality readings at Butcher Corner to the number of HGVs, when the number of HGVs, as I've said many times, and I think I need to underline again, because I don't think members on this committee have read the report that came to the area committee, or some members certainly not, that gives that detailed data so far. We heard that this is an 18-month trial. It is an 18-month trial, but it's not an 18-month consultation. The initial consultation was supposed to end last August. This consultation is supposed to end in May, not in 18 months from the start date of the consultation. So basically what that means is we need to get our views in now, before the end of the trial period, basically. So I think it's just worth making that point again. And the only reason that this came back forward was not because of the damage to the counters. That the counters went down after the initial consultation had ended. The reason why it was started up again is, obviously, as I contacted the directors there to state that I don't think we had the consultation responses that we needed to. We've heard about air quality and respiratory illnesses. Absolutely. This is why I'm saying that we need to stop looking at something and pursuing something which is not working in terms of improving air quality, although air quality is increasing, as some of the measures that Gary's mentioned already, partially due to technology as well. We need to start pursuing options which are actually going to have a fundamental difference to air quality, not something which I will underline again. So far, there is no evidence to show that this HGV ban has improved air quality. The only evidence that has come forward is from members of the public in Councillor Burr's ward on Highfield Road, members of the public in Councillor Goodrick's ward and division as well, from the parish councils there, and from others in mine and Councillor Ives' ward. The evidence, I think, is pretty clear, and I hope that members of this committee will have an answer to those people when they will start asking them questions about it. It is not working, and it needs to come to an end as soon as possible.
Thank you, Councillor Duncan. I've seconded the amendment, but I also moved the original motion, so I will come back on a few points that have been made. Like you stated, the number of HGV movements at Butcher Corner have not decreased. The evidence does not suggest there has been a decrease, and therefore, if the number of HGVs are not reducing at Butcher's Corner, it makes you question, what is the point of all this? Ultimately, because of the ban on the level crossing, the number of movements on Church Street, the High Street of Norton, have increased. Councillor Burr referred to the congestion on Church Street. Councillor Duncan didn't in his moving speech, but it was raised by Councillor Burr. But because of this ban, it does increase the number of HGVs waiting on the lights of Church Street because they do not have access to the level crossing. So let's say if they were going down Wellham Road, they would have to travel the length of Church Street to access that. Also, significant concerns have been raised regarding the displaced movements on the lights of Highfield Road, which is near a primary school. So when Councillor Burr talks about children crossing and the potential dangers, I also am very conscious of that, and because the evidence doesn't suggest a decrease in HGVs at Butcher's Corner, yet there is an increase in the lights of Highfield Road where there's a primary school, it once again makes a question, why are we doing this? And finally, you know, as a member for Norton West, I can tell you what the public opinion is from speaking to people out and about, by looking at the comments within the media. And the public are very much against this. They see this as madness because it's not reducing vehicle movements. It's just pushing it into other areas. There has been a lot of criticism from people where there's movements have been displaced, and it's ultimately not leading to a reduction in Butcher's Corner, just to reiterate that point once again, because it is quite vital. Therefore, I fully agree that we should look at this pilot, bring it to a closure, but more importantly, we need to look at a holistic solution, as Councillor Goodrick alluded to, for the wider traffic situation in Moulton and Norton. We'll now proceed to the vote. We're voting on the amendment.
Chairman, that's three votes for, four against, and three abstentions.
Thank you, sir. That amendment does not pass. I'd like to move another amendment. That this item is referred to full council. Councillor Raper seconds that. I'll speak very briefly on this. I think we all appreciate the importance of air quality. There is a consultation, and I think it's right it goes to the wider group of members to respond to this important issue. We'll now proceed to the vote.
Chairman, that is nine votes for and one abstention.
Thank you. So this item now becomes a Part B item, and whatever the outcome, it will go on to full council for a final decision. Do any of the members wish to speak on this item? No, in which case we'll vote on the substantive recommendation. It's the substantive recommendation. So the amendment, Councillor Duncan's amendment failed. However, a new amendment was moved to make it a Part B item. So it's a substantive recommendation, but now just going on to full council. It will go to the next council. It will be going to the budget council. However, we will, if possible, deal with the budget budget item first at that council, due to the fact that we need to set a budget. There is some uncertainty at the moment as to whether we'll be able to deal with the budget on that date, due to the decision of the Police and Crime Commissioner panel to reject the preset proposal of the PCC. Because of that, everything's been delayed somewhat, so we may need to look at our decision-making timetable, but the intention would be to deal with the budget item first, and if time permits, the other agenda items. However, there is a reserve council meeting set, so if there's not time to deal with those other items, or indeed we've got to postpone the budget decision, it will be done on that reserve council meeting. Hope that makes sense.
So, Chairman, the result of that vote was nine votes for and one abstention.
Thank you. So we're now going to move on to the remainder of the Part B items. I am conscious of time and the fact that we may still have quite a bit of time to take, and therefore going to take a quick five-minute adjournment, and we will resume in five minutes' time to go through the remaining items.
Okay, so now we're going to resume the meeting. I'm aware some members are absent, although I did give notice it would only be for 5 minutes. I assume that the next two, the next item won't necessarily be controversial. Agenda item 9, polling districts, polling places and polling stations review, outlined on pages 43 to 64 of your agenda papers. I will now ask the Democratic Services Manager and Deputy Electoral Registration Officer to introduce the report, please.
Thank you, Chairman. Just before I introduce the report, I'd like to introduce members to a new member of staff who sat right at the end of the row at the front here, Ellen Walker, who's joined us in Business and Democracy and will be working on committees and elections and other democratic services things. So you'll be coming across her over the forthcoming weeks and months. In terms of the report, every 5 years, by law, we have to carry out a polling station review in Rydale, because our options on premises in many villages and towns is fairly limited. There's usually fairly few changes to make, and in the case of this review, there is in fact only one change proposed, which is to use a new venue that's become available in Hareham. I should emphasise for clarity that ward boundaries is not something that falls within the remit of this review. I know from time to time there's been an issue with a ward boundary in Norton that's drawn to our attention, and that's not something that's within the direct control of the council. So the review only looks at polling districts and polling stations. For completeness, I will mention there's a couple of temporary changes to polling stations coming up at the elections in May. They're not part of this review, but they've been taken by officers in as decisions by officers in consultation with ward members using delegated powers. One relates to Farndale, where the band room is going to be used as a polling station because the village hall is being rebuilt at the moment. The other one relates to Yeddingham, where the polling venue is unavailable and electors will be redirected to Eberston for this election. They're both temporary changes, as I say, and that's outside of the remit of this review. There's two recommendations that PNR is asked to make to full council. One is to approve the change set out in Annex 1, and the second one is to reconfirm the delegated authority so that officers can deal with any temporary changes that are required between reviews in consultation with ward members. Thank you.
Thank you. Do members have any questions? No, in which case I'll move the recommendation as chairman, which is seconded by the vice chairman. Do members wish to speak on this item? No, in which case we'll proceed to the vote.
Councillor Duncan, has he left?
He's not there.
Chairman, that's unanimous.
We'll now proceed to agenda item 11, council tax penalties, outlined on pages 71 to 74 of your agenda papers. I will now ask Anton Hodge, the Chief Financial Officer, to briefly introduce the recommendation.
Thank you, Chair, and it is quite a brief. It's a fairly straightforward paper, it's recommending that we start charging people who don't tell us when they've changed circumstances around council tax. It outlines the reasons for this. It's not really about the fact that we think we'll get lots of money by doing this. However, it will save us some time in administration. It also acts as a deterrent. for people who don't tell us. And also it does have an impact on people, because when we do eventually find out, we often have to go back and then backdate claims and payments and so on. So we are allowed to do this under legislation. I think in some cases we actually say that we can do this, but we haven't done it and it's not in our policy. So it's asking you to recommend to council that we do this.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Councillor Thornton.
Thank you. Failing to inform a billing authority within 21 days where a discount should no longer be granted, would the person in question know that he had 21 days and he would know that he would have to make that information available to the council? I mean, is it a very straightforward process? Is it possible to fail to do this just by not reading the small print and innocently not let Rydell know?
I think what we need to do is ensure that people are aware that this is something they have to do, and we can do that. We communicate with everyone annually on this, and I think we just need to highlight that this is their responsibility to do it.
I think, as I heard Councillor Cowling just say, ignorance is not a defence, and yes, ignorance of the law is not a defence. And I could just imagine, if a defence for not submitting a tax return was that you didn't know you had to, how many people would suddenly not realise they had to make a tax return? Are there any further questions? No? In which case, I'll move the officer recommendation, which is seconded by the Vice Chairman. Do members wish to speak on this item? No? In which case, we'll proceed to the vote.
Chairman, that's unanimous.
Thank you. Moving on to the next agenda item, item 12, council tax empty homes, outlined on pages 75 to 78 of your agenda papers. Once again, I'll ask Anton Hodge, the Chief Financial Officer, to briefly introduce the recommendation. Okay. I feel as though on that point I should declare an interest as a landlord. My properties are let. I believe it's a personal, non-prejudicial interest, and so I'll still participate in the debate. And my vote will once again evidence that I'm not prejudiced by this. Councillor Duncan?
I was going to ask a question, if that's okay. Is this the maximum amount of which we can apply? Obviously it's staggered between different years and different rates increasing, but is this a maximum that we can do?
It is at the moment, yes. It actually says in 2.2 about this will take effect when the bill is ratified. It has gone through Parliament now and we are able to do this.
Councillor Thornton?
Does this apply to second homes, which may be only occupied for a short, very short period of time, or perhaps not at all for a year?
No.
Yeah, there is a separate charging mechanism, Councillor Thornton, for second homes, and I believe that councils can now charge a greater amount for second homes, as I believe Cornwall Council was one of the first ones to do that, or somewhere in a popular tourist area. Any further questions? No, in which case I'll move the recommendation, which is seconded. I do strongly support this because I believe that empty properties are a blight on our communities. there are many people who want a home, particularly young people. And, you know, they're having to remain at home with their parents in order to get a step on the property ladder. But if there is an additional supply, then, of course, there will be more opportunity for people to use those homes. And I think everyone acknowledges as well that development is controversial, especially when it's on greenfield sites. So if you've already got houses that are stood there and could be occupied but are not, then once again, it's encouraging development that may not necessarily be needed. When I can remember when the government first introduced this in, I think it was 2011, and I remember moving an amendment then to increase it to 125%, which was against the officer recommendation, because it was viewed at the time that this would actually lead to an increase in the amount of income generated, and instead people would try to manoeuvre and come to avoidance arrangements. So it was viewed that the administration cost would outweigh the potential benefit. But what actually happened is it was proved that this additional tax did generate income, and whilst it was a small proportion for Rydell, particularly for the rights of the county council, it was much greater. And so the government saw that nationally, hence why it has increased to 150, and then we've also got it before us this evening to increase it even further than that. So once again, I just want to emphasise, empty homes are a blight. I think it's right that those who are blighting in our community pay extra and contribute towards that community, and also the contributing more council tax, it will also go into areas of services that we provide, such as provision for housing, etc. So very warmly move this recommendation. Any other members wish to speak? No? Councillor Raper?
Just quickly, Chairman, have we got a, I think we need a policy that if there's a home, we can identify that it's been open, or empty rather, for a substantial period of time, that we take steps to compulsory purchase it and get it back onto the housing market. Is that possible that we can make an amendment to that effect?
It would be possible to make an amendment to that effect, but we would need further information on that before it go into council, because compulsory purchase orders are an area where there's considerable rules and regulations, and they're also open to legal challenge. I also believe there would be a question as to whether compulsory purchases would be the best way of tackling the housing problems, and instead the money could be better invested in other areas which would deliver more housing units, more affordable homes for much lower value, simply because the legal costs involved in a compulsory purchase order and the compensation to the property owner would be quite substantial. And so, like I said, I'm sure there's better value mechanisms to do that. Of course, it's your prerogative if you wish to move an amendment, but of course when it went on to council we would need further information to make an informed decision.
I wasn't looking to compensate the property owner if you'd left a property that's as valuable as they are today empty for several years.
Yeah, you would by law have to give compensation. We can't just seize property. Any further additions to the debate? No, in which case, let's go to the vote.
Chairman, that's 8 votes for and 1 abstention.
So, moving to the next agenda item, item 13, business rates relief, outlined on pages 79 to 82 of your agenda papers. Once again, I'll ask Anton to introduce the recommendation. Okay.
Can I just check in terms of declarations of interest? I mean, surely things like this, anything relating to council tax, people who pay council tax on this committee will not have to declare an interest. Otherwise, I'll be the only person left in this room, I think.
So on the issue of council tax, there is a dispensation in place by the scrutiny committee that covers all members, because clearly any homeowner could have a pecuniary interest, but there's a dispensation. There's not specifically a dispensation for, I don't know if there is for business rates, we can look at that. However, it is to each member individually to determine if they have a personal or prejudicial or pecuniary interest. It's for them alone to determine. Of course, there may be complaints, and in which case there's a process to follow, but each member has to determine for themselves what their conflict may or may not be. Okay, Anton.
Yes, very briefly, and moving away from charges and penalties, this is something a bit more positive in terms of putting in place rates relief for smaller businesses. It's set out in the report how this would work. It's around a reduction of one third for 2 years for businesses with a value of less than £51,000. This would be funded by a grant from central government, so there's no cost to the council.
Any questions? No, in which case I'll move. Seconded by Councillor Arnold, the Vice-Chairman. Obviously, this is a very positive thing. You know, it's helping small businesses, and it's to be welcomed. Do other members wish to comment? No, in which case we'll go to the vote.
Chairman, that's 8 votes for and 1 abstention.
Thank you. We'll now move to agenda 14, which is exempt information. So members will note that as part of the financial strategy, the full results of the public consultation are included within the agenda packs. The intention is to, of course, have the debate in public on the financial strategy, that goes without saying. And all the documents will be published and have already been published regarding the financial strategy. However, the public consultation documents, due to it relating to personal data and individuals' own comments, when they submitted those, wouldn't have been an expectation they would have been made public. The recommendation is that we go to exempt just so those comments won't be disclosed. Councillor Duncan?
Are those comments in the... My iPad's died, so I can't remember, but do the comments on including the consultation, are they aligned to individual people's names?
They are not directly aligned to individuals' names. However, certainly some of the comments, it may be possible to determine individuals, and certain views are expressed in those. Now, the actual results will be public, and they will be available on the website, so the total results. It's only the comments section due to the potential for individuals' own political views and the potential but to...
There's no way you could align those to individuals, though. There's no individual data included inside the consultation.
There is no structured personal data. Yeah. Of course, there could always be the potential for people to indirectly link that back to individuals.
I mean, I just feel like I don't think we need to go into exempt, is the point I'm trying to make.
The debate will not be in exempt whatsoever.
What are we exempting?
It's just the comments on the public consultation, which would be exempt. So, under the Local Government Act, any documents that are included in the agenda papers are, as standard, published on the internet, that are open to the public. Okay? In order to keep back certain information from the agenda papers, you would need to just move exempt. So we're moving exempt of that part of the agenda document. We will not be moving into exempt, and all the other parts of the agenda document will be public. It's only those papers which you can see in your agenda pack have exempt markings against those. Of course, it is the prerogative of members on this committee to make that information public if they so wish. Like I said, if that is the wish of the committee, then the comments would be published on the internet afterwards.
Can I move that this isn't exempt then?
I've moved exempt, so all you have to do is vote against it. Councillor Goodrick.
Chair, I think we're just getting caught up here. We are only exempting those comments on the feedback from the general public. And I think it's disingenuous to those people who have taken the time to make those comments that then they are put out there and then they could perhaps be identified. I don't think that's what we should be doing. Otherwise, any future consultations, people will simply not respond. So for me, I will be supporting the chairman's move to exempt this bit of the information.
Yeah, it's because the full comments are public, included in the agenda pack, some of which do actually refer to individuals, if not by name. There's certainly implication, by implication. But like I said, it's a gift of members. I've not got very strong views on this one way or another, to be honest. I'm very comfortable. But let's just go to the vote on this.
Chairman, 8 votes for and 1 against.
Thank you. What we will be doing, as well as just publishing on the internet the aggregate results, because those certainly have no reason to be exempt, so the aggregate results will be available.
It's got exempt plastered across it, and we've just voted to make that exempt, so...
So this will be separate to the agenda papers, but
yeah,
it
but
was
this has got exempt all over it, and we've just voted to make this section of the report exempt.
It was the so when I moved the amendment, I talked about the public comments. It will be the actual graphs.
This thing with exempt on that is not going to be exempt, yeah. And you're making that decision, Chairman.
To confirm, and this is really necessary, the public comments, so the writing, the unstructured data as such, that will be...
You didn't say that originally.
I talked about the comments and other people are stating that. I asked you to go back to the recording.
That's fine. As long as we now know where everything stands, that's fine.
Okay, let's go to the debate on the financial strategy. Agenda item 15 outlined on pages 83 to 144 of your agenda papers. Anton, over to you, please.
Okay, thank you. It's a bit of an introduction to this and then a little bit about the content. So I think as members will be aware, this is an accumulation of work that's happened over the last few months, and I've been bringing sort of updates and bits and pieces as we've been building this process through that time. We've also, as you know, undertaken some budget reviews of all services, what we call root and branch reviews, and that has identified what you would normally call savings and budget pressures. But again, as I've said previously and also in the members' briefing, these are savings that, I think in all cases, are not about reductions in service as such or about projects that we need to do to reduce money. This is really about correcting some of the budgets and having more realistic budgets matching what we're actually spending. It does also include more realistic levels of income, particularly around business rates. And you'll see in the later report, as was the case last year, that part of the reason for the council's underspend has been recovery of income for business rates at a higher, much higher level than the budget. So again, we're correcting that. It also shows the impact of the business rates pool and the pilot, that the North Yorkshire and West Yorkshire pilot, which was successful. It shows certain grants which, as we've done in previous years, particularly around new homes bonus and also additional excess rates, if you like, continuing to go into reserve for the next financial year. And it also shows an amount of funds set aside for capacity building. And again, it's something we've spoken about. We've put down a marker for this and included a figure. The don't have the details for all of that yet because we are still going through some of that work. You'll have heard about a number of health checks that are being undertaken, but it's not just those health checks. It's also been other reviews and indeed comments from members around that capacity. We will set aside a process so that before that money is spent, there is a proper and a transparent process for doing so. So this isn't putting aside an amount of money that can be spent on anything without any further consideration by members. In terms of the council tax, the assumption that's used in the report is an increase of £5 on a Band D property. Again, similar to previous years. I try to highlight that by doing that, we're raising about £108,000. And certainly if you look at next year's budget, it would be possible to live without it, frankly. However, the danger there is that if you remove that, or if you don't increase that, you remove that amount of money forever from the base. And that will have an impact on future years, and particularly, as you can see, for the two following years after 1920, where we're predicting at this stage a budget gap. That gap is, of course, based on what we know, and we've taken a realistic approach in some cases to what we think might or might not happen with new homes bonus or indeed business rates. Again, previous reports and discussions, we've highlighted the real need for the spending review to be done as soon as is possible. It is due sometime in the summer, and you'll know from previous consultations that summer can extend over 9 months of the year. So we're hoping that will come sooner rather than later. We are feeding back into the consultation of that, and again went through some of that in the member seminar recently. So we do have time to look at that, to look at those gaps for 2021 and 21-22, and there may well be a need to come back for further savings. I'm very acutely aware, however, of the position that the council has been in the last few years, where we have required to make savings, and the council's income and spend on services has reduced considerably, but we have made cuts to an extent where we have been underspending in some areas or not reflecting the true budget. So we just need to be... So I'm very cautious about that, but I do think, from what we know at the moment, there will be some issues to come, not next year, but in the years after that. Final few other things to mention. Within the report, we talk about the redefinition of reserves, and again, we've spoken about that, and that's about, frankly, making better use of them, but also including a process that's more transparent in how they are used, and indeed having member engagement and decision taking on how they are used. The capital programme, I've been talking really about revenue. The capital programme, more work, say that up front, more work is still required on that. The position of the capital programme in this report, in the proposal, is as it has already been agreed, with some reprofiling of slippage. But as I say, some further discussion is needed. There are various other sections to draw your attention to, including what we're planning to do on fees and charges. But I don't want to say too much more than that, really. That's just really highlighting some of the things that are in this budget report. So I'll leave it there for now.
Any questions?
Disappointing renewal.
Okay.
I suppose one question is, obviously, we have got this massive amount of money in reserves, and some of the comments reflected in the now-exempt public comments is that we have got those significant amounts of money, and they feel that it would be appropriate for us to invest that money in perhaps channeling that through into the revenue budget, at least for the present time. Has that been explored in much detail at all as a potential option? I know you mentioned about the base, but I'm not quite sure if that's necessarily convincing to the public in terms of the comments that we've received.
If I just answer that first, before we get to spending our reserves, you would first of all have to spend your current budget, and in previous years we've not even been spending the current budget. After that, you've also then got other revenue income, such as new homes bonus, which we have been quite prudently putting aside as well. So there are probably other avenues that you would explore before you would then start to look at your reserves. And also make the point as well that once you spend your reserves, you can only spend them once. Okay, I will move the budget strategy, which is seconded by the Vice Chairman. Do members wish to speak on this item? Yes, Councillor Vepper.
In this camp with Councillor Duncan on this a little bit, that we have some substantial sums at the moment that we could do a great deal of good with, and make our financial situation a little more secure in the longer term by doing something with that finance now. And I won't be so presumptuous to say what I would like to see it spent on now, because I think we would need some information as to what could be done, how it could be done, and should it be done before we get to that point of saying we will do. So I'm just wondering if there's anything that Anton's got up his sleeve in thoughts that we can do that's legal and beneficial to the taxpayer in general in this area, that we can create an income stream of some sort from the finance, other than trying to rely on interest rates, which are horribly low at the present time, and after the in 50 years' time, hopefully might change for the better.
Thank you. Any other comments? No. In which case, I'll just briefly wrap up. It has been mentioned about the reserves tonight and the fact we've got £12 million in reserves, and it's almost said in a way that could be interpreted negatively, when I actually think it's a positive thing that we have got those reserves, that we've got a cushion for the years ahead when there is going to be even further cuts to our revenue budget, but more importantly there's going to be other additional strain. We've already heard about potential for new rounds having to be introduced as part of our recycling programme. That's going to entail cost, and so the fact that we enter those challenging years from a position of strength is to be welcomed. But also the fact that we've got that money to invest means that we can look at wider strategic projects. And Councillor Raper mentioned about investment. Members will recall that we have commissioned a detailed report into the potential of investing within a livestock market site as a whole, and to explore those potential options. That will be coming back to members soon, and so that creates opportunities that would not be available had we not have reserves. So, like I said, I do defend the fact that we have been prudent in the years gone by, and that we are in a good position moving forward, because I tell you what, it would be far worse if we had been overspending by £2 million in previous years and we had no reserves. I think there would be a lot more criticism then. Right, we're going to move to the vote, please.
Chairman, that's unanimous.
Many thanks.
moving to the final agenda item this evening of this marathon meeting. It's the Q3 budget monitoring. So once again, members will recall a commitment to increase transparency and openness about our finances. This report has been coming forward at nearly every Policy and Resources Committee meeting, including additional meetings that weren't called for that purpose. So I do thank Anton for his hard work. And in addition to that, there has been increased activity within the Resources Working Party as well. So there is now considerable financial oversight. What's more is a budget monitoring report, which before you would expect to be picked up by just the Working Party, is going to full council. So members will have opportunity to discuss and review the figures once again there. Anton, can I ask you to brief this item to members, please?
Yes, thank you. And you've covered much of it. This is our formal Q3 report, so it's taken into account expenditure up to the end of December. If I'm being perfectly honest with you, I still don't think we're there yet in terms of the format of this, and we need a little bit more work on it. But I think it usefully points out that we're predicting an underspend in this current financial year of just under 1.1 million. Roughly half of that's to do with business rates. The other half is real savings and underspends within services. The details are there. One area I will point out around staffing, because you'll have seen in the budget report that we are going to take some money out of the staffing budget because we've been budgeting at top of scale. And you might look at this and say, well, actually, staffing, you're not underspending that much at this stage. That's true, but I remind you that we did, over the summer, spend quite a bit of money on agency staff, which is more expensive. Those agency staff have now been replaced by some permanent appointments, so that will get better. The other thing we did in this year's budget, and you cast your mind back to this time last year, you approved a saving on T2020 for street scene of around £200,000, largely to do with staffing. That didn't happen, but the staffing budget was reduced, so that will right itself in due course. But that's the general message. I think there's more to come on this, and including continued improvements in capital monitoring too. But it'll be interesting to see when we get to year end if we finish with a 1.1 million. Setting myself up here, I fear. But, see how good our budget monitoring is. But that will be a useful exercise in itself.
Any questions? Councillor Thornton.
Thank you. It seems that we're sort of getting to grips with the comings and goings of money and where, you know, and realistic sums of money, and getting to grips with, you know, just where it is in various sort of accounts and so on. And there will come that time when we can sit back and say, we really understand this, we've got the figures, now then what are we going to do about it? Do we have a plan for how those decisions are considered and made, shared and discussed? Because it's important that is a sort of it goes through a sort of democratic process with the ability to consider that and discuss it seriously.
I'll respond to this question because you talk about process, and as the committee chairman responsible for the finances of the council. I'll just outline what that process is, and Councillor Thornton obviously may be aware of the standard process, which is anything goes to the Resources Working Party. That's where policy ideas start, or proposals, then goes on to this committee, and then in turn it goes on to council. And so that's a well-established procedure. And naturally, in the future, if there are going to be changes to the budget or amendments, etc., it would go through that procedure, and it would also be dealt with in accordance with our financial and standing orders. So those standing orders state that any expenditure over £25,000 requires to be signed off by the chief executive plus the committee chairman, and anything over £50,000 needs to be signed off by a committee. So clearly there is a framework in there that means that any decision making requiring large sums of money go through a proper process.
Thank you, Chair. It's just that when you have a concept or a suggestion, that process seems to be Working Party, PNR Council, and is there provision within that to kick an idea about and keep bringing it back to the Working Party with more information before it then gets fed off into sometimes almost like an inevitable decision-making process thereafter?
You refer to an inevitable decision process. I refer to it as democracy. And clearly anything that goes through that process is voted upon by the elected members. There have been occasions when the committee has referred items back to the Working Party. Equally, there have been items in the last year when the council has referred an item back to the committee, which in turn has started life again in the Working Party. The livestock market being one of those where clearly there could be big not only capital implications, but there was also revenue implications. You recall on that item, originally we started off at £150,000, and by the time it was referred back and went through that cycle again, it went down to 50. So the mechanisms that you're talking about are already there, but clearly when an item goes before a committee or council, it's the gift of those democratic elected members to decide to proceed how they wish. And it may be that some members do not wish the decision to be made at that time, but if it is, there's a democratic decision behind that. Okay? Right. Unless there's any further questions, I'll move to that we note the report, which is seconded by the Vice Chairman. Do members wish to speak on this item? Let's go to the vote.
Chairman, that's unanimous.
Thank you. So that concludes this meeting of the Policy and Resources Committee. I thank members for your attendance, and I will see you at full council.